Okay, okay, Amy, wow. Boy, she gets you out of a room fast. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. We're going to just slow it down a little bit now. Relax. Welcome. Stay as long as you like. It's time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is, as mentioned, Off the Wall. It's Emmanuel Goldstein over here, joined by Kyle. Hope you're there.
Hello. Come in. Come in. Come in.
And
come in.
I'm here. I'm
Do
here.
Do you read me?
I read you loud and clear. And a special guest tonight. Dolores.
Oh, she's...
Welcome.
Hi. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I renamed her.
Whoa.
She's now called Dolores.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is after having been interrupted in the remote studios several times by these automated things.
Well, this is what I've been building out in the shed. As you can see, this is not just one of these electronic devices. It's actually got some form to it. It moves around in a clunky fashion, but it does move around. And it's slow. You can outrun it for now.
What's going on with that other leg there?
Well, I don't think that's going to work out. But I have so much time on my hands now that I can learn this. And actually, you know, she has been helping looking things up when it gets difficult. Dolores, how do you feel today? Okay. Dolores. Okay. She goes on a bit sometimes.
She's waving her arms at
you. Dolores, could you turn your volume up to 6? Okay. Thank you.
Of course.
Oh, that's better, right?
I hear her, yeah.
The smile?
I can't believe that...
The smile on her metal tube there, that...
I can't believe that she doesn't blink. I mean, is that...
Blinking is extra. Blinking
is that
takes
something you just turn on and off?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not blinking now, and that's a little spooky, but...
Well, don't look directly at it like that.
She seems helpful.
Yeah. But, you know, this is good for a number of things that you need. For instance, Dolores... What time is it?
It's 6:07 p.m.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
That was a little cheery.
Well, I'm programming her to be cheerful because too many of the A-word devices, if I can say.
Home assistant.
She doesn't like me to use that word.
the residential drawer.
Yes, they're kind of monotone, you know, not very. We use the same voice, you know. We copied over the voice. I probably shouldn't say that, but we found audio files and developed
a
little bit more.
Stitched this together, sort of a little bit of like a mutant. Shall you say mutant robot?
Yeah.
It's got a couple different...
It's a bit derogatory when you say it like that. But for lack of a better word, I suppose that is accurate.
Well, it's like a cross of a bunch of different types of robots that you're helping us out with. So, but that definitely had a thumbs up, that last thing that it said. It was like really, really a little too... Like extra cheery.
Okay, noted. For the revision...
I don't know if you turned that down, if that's the kind of thing you're... Working
no,
on
of course,
out
no. We
there.
can do that. We can do all kinds of things. But anyway, yes. So it's basically developing its own personality. And if you need to know anything, by all means, I'm the only person that she listens to.
She only listens to you.
Yeah. Go ahead. Try talking to her.
Dolores, can you tell me what day of the month it is?
See, nothing. Nothing at all. Dolores. Will you tell me what day of the month it is?
February 1st, 2021 was on a Monday.
All right, that was a mistake. That's not what I asked.
A big glitch.
Yeah, we do have some work to do ahead of us. That's obviously
it's off by one.
These are the early days of robotics, and we'll get there. We'll get there. But she can do all kinds of other things too. You know?
Where are you going with this?
Where am I going with this? That's a good question.
It seems like it's taken over your life, and I mean these are fairly
common. It's a distraction. It's a distraction. Okay, well, watch this. Dolores, play the Off the Wall radio show.
Getting Off the Wall from Amazon Music. Here's Off the Wall, Jan 12, 2021.
And this is in particular an issue for...
See, that's one of our shows.
On Thursday and
could you
Friday
ask her to skip ahead? Like,
I could, but, you know, I don't want to waste any more of her time or our time.
We're linked to
Amy.
That's Amy rushing somebody else out the door. Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much.
Doris.
No, thank you.
Stop. Do you see that? Did you see what she, that gesture? Dolores. Please stop. And that's all it takes. The power of please. You see, it's a simple thing. Treat your electronics with respect. They will treat you with respect back. That's how it is. That's how it works. That's the way of the world. Anyway, so this has been a week. The impeachment trial is over. That's Saturday. What a miserable excuse for a trial that was. Oh,
big,
my God.
Big disappointment.
But not a surprising disappointment.
No.
Yeah, I got to say, the hypocrisy of Republicans just, it doesn't surprise me anymore, but it does still hit me. You know, to see Mitch McConnell go out there and moments after voting against convicting Trump, says that he's guilty of the charges that he was being accused of. He literally did that. And weeks before, he was the one who made sure that the impeachment trial did not happen while Trump was in office, and then used the excuse of Trump not being in office for not convicting him. So in other words, yeah, he's guilty, but he's not in office, so we can't convict him. And yeah, he's not in office because I pushed for the trial to be held after he was taken. I mean, does he not see what he's doing? Do we not see what he's doing? And the whole issue of saying that, well, we can't convict him because we don't have the constitutional right to hold a trial after he's out of office. Well, that was already voted on. That was decided in a court of law. And I know this is kind of a crazy court of law when you have an impeachment trial, but if in a court of law you're told that, well, this is how the court has decided, well, you have to act on that belief, on that finding, even if you don't agree with it. So if you were told that, yeah, this is constitutional because your fellow jurors voted on it, and that's just the way this court works, well, that's how you should vote. You should vote based on the knowledge that, yeah, what we're doing is constitutional. It's already been decided. But no, these Republicans voted to acquit him because they still were voting on the first issue of whether or not the whole thing was constitutional. And of course, it's constitutional. So he got away with it. Got away with it, but they didn't get away with it because everybody saw their true colors. Everybody saw just how they operate, how they think, and how they cheat. You know, they get away with it because they can do it. But it's still cheating. And it's really disgusting.
They try to make doing what's wrong look right. And
yeah.
It basically disillusions and takes a lot of people's faith out of their understanding of the representation that's there. And it's hugely disappointing. That's all I can think of. I don't know. I don't have words. It's really sad.
Well, the thing that bothers me more than this is the knowledge, the facts that are coming out. We see stories like this. Republicans love Trump even more now that he's been impeached twice. You know, it's, where is this going? It's true cult-like behavior. You know, there was a huge rally outside Mar-a-Lago yesterday for President's Day for Trump. The one person you shouldn't be rallying for on President's Day. And they are emboldened. And those few Republicans who stood up for what was right and actually voted to convict or even just voted to impeach in the House of Representatives, they're the ones being punished. They're the ones paying the price. Not Trump. Trump never pays the price. But if you stood up and said, yeah, he did some bad things, January 6th was terrible, if you dare criticize him, your own party will come down on you and punish you and maybe even take you out of office. So how do we even continue to pretend that the Republican Party is either worth saving or capable of being saved. I don't see it. I just don't see it anymore.
Or put in the word trusted. I think you said it many times in the last couple of weeks, but it's been glaring. How do you trust people? How do you trust... a lot of faith has been taken away. I just can't understand the... where do we go from here when you can't establish a baseline of decency, of decorum, and these are not hard... This wasn't a hard thing to defend and to stand up for or to be unified on.
No, it really wasn't. It really wasn't. And it wouldn't have cost them anything, really,
and
to stand up for what was right.
I can't think of the last thing that was really sort of everyday functional thing that there was bipartisanship on. And that really is, really, it's required to get all of the different perspectives on every single issue. And if you can't work together and stuff, I don't know. So much has been lost for this particular cause. And it's a cause that will come back and come for you if you're not obedient, mm-hmm. and your allegiance isn't forever. And that's wrong, too, because there's nothing about a party that requires you to stay with the party. You know, they earn my allegiance and don't necessarily have it for life. And I think a lot of people have lost sight of that. They think that because of some particular issues or passions they have around what their idea of the party is, they think they have to be that way forever. And it's weird because there has been bipartisanship in some of this decision making. It just wasn't enough to send a message. So as you're saying, there's like some froth or some backlash sort of coming back around, even as Democrats are just barely getting started with an administration and need to get past this, and the country needs to get past it. It's telling that COVID is the most unifying thing in a lot of ways. Even that's divisive.
No, that's not unifying at all. No, they don't agree. They don't agree on anything. You know, they will fight science. They will fight facts. We have so much to get.
They'll agree on working on it.
No, they won't agree on that either. They really won't. Look at what's going on with... This has not been an inspiring...
Bad example.
I'll say it. But let me just say one thing that's positive. The one glimmer of hope that the Republicans have comes out of all places, Utah. The Utah Republican Party released a statement yesterday accepting the different votes of the state's Senators Mitt Romney and Mike Lee in last week's impeachment trial, marking a stark contrast with how other state and county GOP party operations have pursued censure against Republicans who voted to impeach or convict former President Donald Trump. Our senators have both been criticized for their vote, the Utah GOP wrote. The differences between our own Utah Republicans showcase a diversity of thought in contrast to the danger of a party fixated on unanimity of thought. There is power in our differences as a political party, and we look forward to each senator explaining their votes to the people of Utah.
That's beautifully...
Now that, how hard is it to say something like that?
Says it beautifully. That encapsulates exactly what I meant.
It's not saying they agree or don't agree, just, okay, you know, we are more powerful in our disagreements. And that is certainly true of anybody. If you can't argue with somebody, and I know lots of people who are incapable of arguing, who I usually agree with, you don't get anything. You don't gain. You don't convince, you know? And you miss out on the dialogue, which I think is the most important part of all this. But when it's just this unilateral, 100%, you know, walk through the wall for somebody, no, that is a cult. And unfortunately, with the exception of Utah right now, the Republican Party has turned into a cult, a fascist cult. I know those are strong words, but boy, what more evidence do you need? You know, it's sickening. It really is. And Democrats really need to step up the game and fight this hard and not worry about bringing these people over. You're not going to bring these people over, okay? Maybe after they realize how brainwashed they've been a few years down the road, you might get them back then. You're not going to get them back now. So we just can't we can't be mild about this. We can't be overly diplomatic, because you'd better believe it's not going to work in the other direction.
And do not let that backlash overtake popular understandings and sentiment around this issue, around history, around the costs of this kind of behavior, and everything we're being distracted by, not actually affecting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to start another party and just move all the fascists over to that party, or if they're just going to rename the Republican Party as the fascist and then start another moderate Republican Party, sort of like the old Republican Party. I don't know how many Republicans are left that haven't been swallowed up in all this.
You almost get the feeling that, like, there's Republicans who want to stick with this. It seems maybe to an outsider like fear of the base currently. But it's more like, oh, well, they'll stay loyal to this for the sake of the base, but they can still mold it to some degree, or that there's something still there. Then they've, I don't know, it seems like a bit of an overcompensation because there's no platform. I mean, what else can you get done? Yes, they'll come back into power if that's going to be the exigence of this craven base they've sought the allegiance from. But how do you have input? How do you have a platform? How do you talk about anything else but the cult of personality and these like crazy conspiracies on top of whatever harmful agenda is woven in there? But I don't feel like there's much to be looking to coming back to that's very sane, you know?
Right.
It's like they're going to have to kind of go down all these rabbit holes to get it to even understand how to talk to this base they want to have some semblance of influence over going forward, right? So it just seems like a miscalculation all the way around, like going back
The Republicans right now have it very easy because no matter what they say to their base, the base will follow. Whereas Democrats will think and argue more, which is good, and that's healthy in most cases. But if we spend too much time doing that, the Republicans will simply march right over us with the nonsense and have their way yet again.
They just want to reach consensus on what the nonsense is,
right.
And then barrel through with that.
So I'm being rude. If I could just bring in Dolores. How many registered Republicans are there in the United States?
There are about 48,408,000 registered Democrats in the United States, making up about 40% of the registered voters across states that track party affiliation. Additionally, there are about 35,142,000 registered Republicans, or 29% of the registered voters.
Thank you very much. Now...
Now, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's going all night. You heard that number, 48 versus, what, 35?
35.
That's how many more Republicans, more Democrats there are than Republicans registered. We sure don't act like that in this country, do we? And every election, you see so many more Democrats in popular numbers voting, and the Democrat, the last time a Republican candidate won the popular vote was in 2004, and that wasn't by very much. And before that, what was it, 1988? It doesn't happen very often.
That number kind of scales up, the registration versus the popular vote wins recently. That kind of scales up in my mind.
And if you look at the Senate, you look at the representation of the Senate, and you count the number of people that each senator represents, you know, a state like California gets two senators, and a state like North Dakota also gets two senators. I think it's over 10 million more are representing Democrats than, but it counts the same. It's a crazy system. It needs to be changed. We need to fix a lot of things. We cannot be timid on this. Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico should become states. More representation that way. It's incredible to me watching that impeachment trial and seeing people who couldn't even vote, in the House of Representatives. That was kind of shocking. And to realize that there are so many other people that don't get fair representation, who should, who count just as much as anyone else. We need to change things, and we can't be timid about changing things. And this is a brief opportunity to do that. You know, we're talking about basically adding more people to the Supreme Court because the Republicans were the ones who stacked the court. Don't let them change the dialogue and say Democrats are stacking the court. No, Republicans stacked the court. They cheated again. You know, they kept Barack Obama's nominee from even making it into debate. And when the same circumstance happened to them, they completely changed the rules. All right, so there are so many ways that Democrats can win if they are aggressive. I like what I've seen so far from Biden. He's done some good things. He seems to be acting aggressively, but he needs to keep it up. I sure hope he does.
The clock's ticking, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Democrats know, Republicans have a blind spot for this, diversity of viewpoints. This is where a party like the Democrats could excel and show them up.
Yeah, like just today I read Biden administration is ending the use of the term illegal alien in government communications. You know, that's a little thing, but it's a big thing. And it's a necessary thing. Language matters. How you refer to people, calling somebody illegal, it's horrible. You don't define somebody based on their immigration status. They're human. And Trump and his followers could never get that and wouldn't get that and realized that if you refer to somebody, you objectify them like this, there is no sympathy for them. You can do whatever you want and get away with it. And they did. They got away with it.
Yeah, fully dehumanizing. It's a horrible way to speak in such a subconscious way, trigger that kind of attitude towards the other and people you should be trying to understand as your fellow citizen, not through this filter, this negative light towards people, you know?
Well, let's stop being so negative. Let's brighten up a little bit. Let's talk about COVID. not just COVID, all right? In fairness, the COVID vaccine, which I became eligible for this week. I became eligible because I've got an underlying condition, thanks to the NYPD in 2004. I got a good case of asthma, which apparently is getting worse. I don't know if it's just a cold or what, but I've been wheezing up something fierce, you know. And I don't know if it's just to prove that I qualify or what, but a lot of people out there really need to get this vaccine, but it's hard. It's not easy. I'm going to walk people through what you can do right now, if you're in New York at least. I can't do all the states. I certainly can't do the whole world, but I can try and do New York. If you go to a website called Am I Eligible, separating those words with dashes, miEligible.COVID19VaccineHealth. Wait, I'm sorry, there was a dot there. COVID19Vaccine.Health.NY.gov. Once more. Am I eligible, with dashes separating those words, .COVID19Vaccine.Health.NY.gov. Now, that's the site where you basically figure out if you're eligible in the first place to register for the vaccine. Now, I'll tell you a little secret. The information that you enter at this point is not saved. So you might as well say that you were born in 1899 or whatever, and you'll immediately be eligible for the vaccine because you meet the age requirements. And then you click on Get Started. At that point, At that point, you will see a list of locations. I'm looking at a list right now. And you can click on schedule your vaccine appointment. This is how you find out if there are any openings. And you should have all the information for either the person that you are registering, because I know a lot of people have relatives who can't sit by the computer all the time and hit reload and be up at 3 in the morning when these things open up. So have all their information, name and address, a phone number for contact information, insurance information, if you have insurance. If you don't have insurance, you just say you don't have insurance. That's pretty simple. But if you're going to say you have insurance, you have to have that information. They also ask about emergency contacts, optional, and other optional information. But basically, identity information is what you need to have on hand. And you need to fill this out pretty fast, because when appointments open up, they don't last that long. Now, we're going to go through a couple. The very first one happens to be SUNY Stony Brook, right here on campus. Stony Brook University Innovation and Discovery Center. That's that new part across Stony Brook Road there. Okay, so basically, you can click on schedule your vaccine appointment. Now, status says no appointments available currently. That does not necessarily correlate to whether or not appointments are available. I know it's counterintuitive, but they don't update that line right away. So oftentimes you will click on schedule your vaccine appointment, and even though it says no appointments available currently, you'll see appointments. It works the other way too. You'll see appointments available and click on schedule your vaccine appointment, and there are no vaccine appointments available. Let's see if there are any available at Stony Brook. I just clicked on the button. No appointments available. So what you do now is you, if you want to keep trying, you can hit Control F4 and just close that tab and click it again and just keep going. Or you can move on to the next one. In this case, it's Jones Beach, which is about 40 miles away. I just clicked on that. No appointments available there. So, you know, I'm getting frustrated at this point. I'm going to the next one. Westchester County Center.
No, that's a hike, isn't it?
It's a hike, yeah. And the thing is, you have to drive there, and then 2 weeks after that, you have to drive there again for the second shot. So there's no getting around that. You have to go to the same place. So no appointments available at Westchester. Aqueduct Racetrack. Boy. Let's click on that. No appointments available there. Nope, you will not be going to the races tonight. And also, this will not be happening anytime soon. If you're lucky, you'll get an appointment in April. Javits Center. Nope, no appointments available there. SUNY Albany. Yeah, we're starting to get further away. No appointments available at SUNY Albany. SUNY Binghamton. No appointments available. Takes a moment for it to show up. SUNY Polytechnic Institute. By the way, these places I'm mentioning, you should note them. These are the places that New York State is operating that you should consider as possibilities. You want to take a drive up to SUNY Polytechnic Institute in Utica? Well, that might be something to do. And they have appointments. Even though it said no appointments available, here they are.
We should do a travel guide for all the places.
Here is something very important. The first date is March 7th, 2021. Now, usually that first date doesn't really exist. And if you click on it, you'll get caught in a loop. And it'll just keep taking you back there, and it'll tell you enter a time, except there are no times to enter. So what I like to do, because I've done this a few times to help people, scroll down a bit. And there are a lot of appointments here. I'm going to scroll down to April 4th. All right. April 4th, I'm looking at some kind of, someone can tell me what software this is, event type point of dispensing. I mean, am I on some kind of concert scheduling site?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay, well, date is April 4th. Time is 8 o'clock until 6:30 p.m. April 4th, 2021. There are three appointments available, so I'm going to click on select visit time. and see what happens. Okay, here we go. There are three appointments available, 8:30 a.m. to 8:45 a.m., 1 p.m. to 1:15 p.m., 2 p.m. to 2:15 p.m. I select a time at this point and then click Next, and then I have to answer all these other questions quickly before somebody else beats me to it. Again, the further down you go, the more of a chance you'll get through that because most people will have selected something earlier. So, as you can see, it took a little while, but we were able to get an appointment at SUNY Polytechnic Institute. Now, State Fair Expo Center in Syracuse is another site. That one has been very available recently. Plattsburgh International Airport, and then Rochester Dome Arena, SUNY Potsdam, and SUNY Potsdam has had a lot of appointments available, so you can definitely, if you feel like driving all the way up there, you can get an appointment there. And the final one in the New York State list is University at Buffalo. Now, you notice I said the New York State list. That's because there are a couple of other ways you can get appointments as well. There's a mass vaccination site at Citi Field in Queens. That is for Queens residents specifically. Yankee Stadium in the Bronx for Bronx residents specifically. Also, there are drugstore chains, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens. They all have their own websites, but they are strictly limited to 65 and above. In other words, those new comorbidities that have been introduced, they're not doing that right now. They're just doing 65 and above. So if you are a 65 and above, you can go, and this works nationwide, you can go to one of their sites and see if there's anything near you in the near future. There are others as well. New York City has a whole bunch. The thing is to just be persistent. Don't give up. It's going to get easier because, think about it, more people are getting vaccinated. That's less people to compete with. Less people will be getting sick, and we're seeing that already. And more time will go by. So by the time April rolls around, it'll be a lot easier than it is now.
More available slots in the day,
mm-hmm.
because most people working then may have sorted it out another way, or you just, that competition factor, I think that's really crucial to realize. Also, availability, that was the other thing I wanted to say.
Right.
There's going to be more supply of medicine.
Yes, there's more coming.
Less people seeking to get it at once.
I think we're getting 20% more over the next couple of weeks, which is great, and that's a significant number. And, you know, the thing that everyone was laughing at Biden about this when he said, I want to do 1 million vaccinations a day. It's 1.6 million a day now. Yeah. Who's laughing now? This can get done if you are determined to get it done. And that's what we need to do. And also, give yourselves some credit as well. The death toll has been going down recently.
Yeah, I think it was 200 today.
200 where?
Or 200 cases, maybe, in New York?
I don't know. I don't know what number you're quoting. I do know that the death toll has been getting closer and closer to 100 in New York, and if it goes below 100, that's kind of like you exhale at that point, because it was well below 100 for a long time, then it went up to 200 again, and now it's been steadily going down. So when it gets below 100, I'll breathe a little easier, theoretically anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely on a downward trajectory.
But mostly, it's because people are following the guidelines, wearing masks, keeping the social distancing. And that's why the cases are going down. And it's very important that the cases continue to go down because of all these new variants that are coming out. You know, the thing is, if you have a lot of people who aren't vaccinated, those variants will take advantage of that. And if they are more aggressive, then that's really bad for the people who are not vaccinated. So the more people who get vaccinated, the less opportunity these mutated versions of the virus have. So,
and the more people that adhere to it, it reduces the opportunity, and the less you would be likely to run into someone who is infected that's spreading it. And that's the whole point of, like, washing your hands and using some kind of face covering when you can't keep a distance.
Yeah, it's not hard. I mean, we've been doing it for almost a year now. It's a pain. I want this to be over so much. I don't understand how anybody could think that there are people who want this to be the way we live. And I understand the frustration of people that don't want to do this, but we have to if we're going to make it. And we've done badly. We've done very badly. We're very close to 500,000 people who have died. And it didn't have to be anywhere near that amount. Now, there's all kinds of controversy right now involving Governor Cuomo about the undercounting of nursing home deaths. I think we've all heard this in the news. His administration confirmed Thursday that thousands more nursing home residents died of COVID-19 than the state's official tallies had previously acknowledged. And, you know, the thing is, when I saw that the Attorney General, Letitia James, had basically charged that the nursing home death count could be off by about 50%. Well, that was something. And considering, this is how it should work. They're both Democrats. Letitia James, Governor Cuomo, both Democrats. But she didn't hold back. She said, no, this is wrong. And again, this is not saying that, as Republicans are saying, that Cuomo murdered all these senior citizens. No, this is saying that the count has been misrepresented for whatever reason. And that is wrong. And that needs to be investigated. And I'm all for that. I am all for that. What I am not for is Republicans telling them what to do, because they are the biggest hypocrites of all. I mean, it's just simply incredible. Republican leaders are calling for both Andrew Cuomo and New York State Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker to resign, because it's not just one person. It's not just Cuomo. It's a systemic problem. And they're getting to the bottom as to why this happened in the first place. But are we going to listen to these people who have been calling for Cuomo's blood for years now, for one thing or another? No. Investigate. But do not trust those people. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. They're calling for his impeachment. Now, why do you think they're calling for impeachment? Because we just impeached Trump for the second time. There are people threatening to impeach Biden. You know, and for nothing in particular, but we're going to impeach you for something. And Kamala Harris, there's actually plans to impeach her next year for some reason. I don't understand it. For instance, Representative Elise Stefanik of somewhere in New York, she wants to impeach Governor Cuomo. She called for our New York Attorney General Letitia James and the U.S. Department of Justice to issue subpoenas to Cuomo and his staff. And here's what she said about Trump. I think he's done a good job. I think he's delegated it to the local level. I think our county public health officials have gotten the support they need. They've gotten funding for PPE and for testing. Our small businesses have gotten the funding they've needed. Individuals have gotten access to stimulus checks. Our hospitals have gotten direct funds. Really? Really? Are we in the same universe? Not a word of criticism for Trump. Not one word for the guy who oversaw 500,000 people. Nearly 500,000 people die. Cuomo does some shenanigans with numbers. And he's got to be impeached immediately. If you look at every Republican who is criticizing Cuomo at this point, just do a little bit of research and see how much criticism they aimed at Donald Trump. And you tell me that Donald Trump is less guilty than Cuomo as far as responsibility for actual deaths. I'm not talking about numbers. I'm not talking about spreadsheets and figuring out who was where and who should get credit for what. I'm talking about actually minimizing this horrible disease. And shrugging off the guidelines that we have been trying to instill in people for this last year. Most people get it. But the people who don't get it, they're strengthened by idiots like Trump who tell them it's no big deal. It'll be over by summer. The numbers are overcounted. It's funny. It sounds like they agree. Numbers are overcounted. Is it Cuomo? The numbers are undercounted. They have trouble with numbers. No, that's not the issue. The issue is, do you take the disease seriously? Say what you will about Cuomo, and I have a lot to say about Cuomo. Plenty of things that bug me about him. Don't get me started on the whole BDS thing. But listening to him day after day for the past year, I think he takes it seriously. At least that's the message he gets out. Maybe he doesn't take it seriously enough, but after listening to a press conference of his, I take it more seriously.
Well, and would the numbers have been so high in the first place if the state wasn't fighting with the federal government to even acknowledge the disease was a problem in the first place?
Well, do you remember when the vaccine was first announced, how Trump said he wasn't going to send it to New York because he didn't like Cuomo's attitude? Where are you Republicans? Lee Zeldin, where the hell are you in criticizing Trump when he says something like that? Okay, but Cuomo's off by, 50%? Here's the other thing. Look at these... at these numbers.
Wasn't there a whole bunch of other like contact tracing and testing fiascos going on at the same
time?
There
are so many fiascos.
It was like simultaneous. It was chaos, right? There's like all of this testing stuff. They're trying to figure out the testing, which testing kits, which...
So last I saw, the revised count is just over 12,000. Nursing home deaths in New York. Florida has exceeded 10,000 deaths. Yeah. And they have less nursing homes. they have significantly less. So I think Florida has a higher rate of deaths in nursing homes from COVID. Who's criticizing the governor there? It's certainly not the Republicans. He's a Republican governor. Don't you think we should be looking into that? The fact of the matter is, every place in the world. Here's a story from the New York Times. How can it happen here? The shocking deaths in Canada's long-term care homes. Quebec, Ontario, everywhere. They're all talking about the same thing. So many people died in nursing homes. That is an unfortunate effect of a pandemic. And did anybody get it right? No, nobody got it right. Everybody screwed something up, Cuomo included. But the Republicans are on him like bees on honey. Actually, they make honey. But the point is, flies on something I can't say.
Well, nursing homes are really, really tough places because you have the most vulnerable people and you have a system that's designed with caretakers and aides and a whole staff and all kinds of systems and operations that, in this case, made them incredibly susceptible to a highly contagious virus that spread even more because of close quarters and in densely populated areas as these waves came through.
Yeah. The point is, question, investigate, but don't trust people who are hypocrites. And anybody who goes after only their opponents and doesn't go after their allies when they make mistakes, as we're seeing many Democrats do right now, rightfully so, in New York, they're going after Cuomo for making a mistake. That is how it should work. Show me Republicans doing the same thing. Yeah, there were a few for the impeachment trial, and that's a good example, but look what happens to them when they do that. They get angry mobs aimed at them. It's disgusting. Oh. Yeah, I don't know where the time goes. It's time for a quick Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I, in all the time that we have, see Academy Award winning films.
That. Yeah, no, it's 1991 in our journey through Academy history.
But wait, 1991 was what we did last year. That was Silence of the Lambs. But this is the foreign winner.
International. Best Picture. Yes, ladies, gentlemen, everyone out there. We're talking about Mediterraneo.
Close enough. It's hard to find, too. I got to tell you, the gymnastics we have to go through to play these films, that we have to get through pirates because we can't get them any other way. This is an Academy Award-winning film, and you can't get it. And then when you do get it, it won't play on the damn Roku. You have to put it on a laptop, and then you can't get the subtitles to work because the program that you're using doesn't support subtitles. And then when you do get the subtitles, they're so tiny you can barely read them until you download an updated version of the program, and then it's so big it fills up half the screen. By that time, 45 minutes have gone by, and you haven't even started the film yet. By the time the film ends, you feel like you deserve a place in the end credits.
That was basically our 45 minutes trying to get this to play on a lot of different devices, and has nothing to do with that flimsy case over there for the other film we're going to watch. This film, it is set during World War II with basically a bunch of soldiers, Italian soldiers, stranded on an island in the Aegean Sea.
A Greek island.
Yes, of course, of course. And it is this look at kind of a ragtag crew of soldiers that think that they're on an island that is occupied in some way, but not. It's sort of abandoned when they get there, and then they have some sort of occupier attacking them. I think the Turkish are involved. And,
well, the Turks don't attack them. One guy comes by and rips them off. That's what happens.
Yeah, I think that was it. That was their, like, indication. That's what where they kind of misplaced their fear.
Uh-huh. The whole war. They're missing the whole war. They can see it in the distance sometimes, but they're basically, they're stranded on this island and they're unaware what's going on because, when the donkey gets killed, there's all kinds.
The
whole thing with a donkey that accidentally gets killed, and the guy who owns the donkey who's very attached to it gets so angry that he smashes the radio.
Yeah, that was it.
And then they can't communicate at that point because apparently nobody in town has a radio. And so the whole war goes by. They're there for years. And then they find out that Italy is partitioned and that the British are now on their side, sort of. The relationships develop. What do you think overall of the film?
I couldn't say it was the best as far as laying out the story and the love interests and so forth. But I get it. I mean, it's a little frenzied.
Well, there is a problem with the film. I mean, it was good. It was funny. It was lighthearted and well-filmed and all that. But, big but here, you know, Mussolini was no angel. And his soldiers certainly were not innocent. So to basically, and this has happened before, Italians tend to portray Italian soldiers as lovable people, and who knows, maybe some are, but you would never guess that there were atrocities, that these guys were on the wrong side of history by looking at this film. Maybe that's not what the film should be about. Maybe that's not what they were intending to do. But if you're looking at an accurate portrayal of history, this isn't it.
Yeah, they're hapless. They're fun-loving. You don't really get the... It's a weird, weirdly appropriate sense of detachment given their circumstance in relation to what Italian soldiers may have been doing during that time.
Yeah.
So it sort of does speak to it, but in a roundabout sense.
If they didn't have the war, maybe this film would have worked better. I think having something as serious as World War II in the background... you got to address that. That's the big elephant in the room, okay? You got to address that. You can't simply write that off as something that you didn't have anything to do with. No, you were a part of it. And maybe that's a lesson for people today.
Yeah, so the mural in the church gets restored, and there's folk dancing, and yeah, it's the guy falls in love with the island's prostitute named Vasilisa.
You know, she was a lot more than a prostitute, whoever wrote that. But the point is...
It's glib. It's really...
It is, yeah. It's worth seeing. It's worth tracking down these films. I don't know if anybody else have the patience to actually go through all the nonsense we went through to see it. Looking forward to 1992. Which...
I'd never heard of that film.
Neither had I.
I'm glad you found it.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, and thanks to those people out there, you know who you are, who helped us... get our hands on that. You ready for tomorrow? No, that's not tomorrow. It's the day after tomorrow. That's when the Mars rover is landing.
Oh, right. the school bus with a jetpack, or it's like it's got rockets and it's going to get a crane to lower it from the rockets when it's after it, it.
7 minutes of terror. And they call it that because that's 7 minutes where you don't know what the hell is going on. Because for some reason radio communications is blacked out, I guess. And of course everything is delayed too by, I think, 12 minutes. So there's going to be, and it's mid-afternoon in on the East Coast. So we'll be biting our nails.
Cooler than the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but this, they'll have a little helicopter that comes along with this that they'll be able to fly around. And they're going to have microphones. We'll be able to hear. I'll be able to hear what Mars sounds like, something I've been wanting to know since I was a kid. The fifth rover is being landed on the red planet, Perseverance, named by that stupid kid. Engineers, now I'm just mad because why did he get the credit for that?
You're so mean to him.
Because why? Perseverance, he didn't invent the word, okay?
He never claims to have invented the word. You know,
but you
forget,
think he
forget.
Did. You know, don't get me all perplexed about
we'll
this.
We'll talk about this after the show.
Perseverance is NASA's most ambitious Mars rover mission yet, focused scientifically on finding out whether there was ever any life on Mars in the past. To answer this question, the landing team will have its hands full getting us to Jezero Crater, the most challenging Martian terrain ever targeted for a landing. When do they name the craters? Is that like a meeting that we get to attend? Because, I mean, who's Jezero?
Well, I think it's happened over the many, many years that Mars has been observed by humans. And I think slowly they get named.
Well,
it's not like a one meeting over, you know, a year.
I miss the meetings where they name streets. You know, I want to be at one of those. The moon craters, stars, you know, all that.
That's actually a really good idea. Both a good idea and a good question. When do they actually come up with what streets have to be named? Is that some city council meeting?
I have such good ideas for street
how
names.
How come street names don't have celestial or astrophysical names? If I'm wrong, are there any neighborhoods in the U.S. that have those
okay.
that we need to know about?
Okay, challenge to listeners. Send us, I guess not pictures, but summations of the coolest developer names. Like out here, we have the S section, where I grew up, actually. Kevin James did, too. Where every street is named after, with the letter S. There's the B section across the street. They're useless. There's somewhere around here, there's an automobile section. There's Chevrolet Drive, things like that. And you can have, there's a horse one, I think, somewhere. So any theme developments, we want to know about
those.
There
are always tree names, but that's everywhere.
Yeah, Maple and Elm, that's just. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We are out of time. It goes so fast. Finn is up next. Oh, and by the way, it was brought to my attention by numerous people that Finn did not care for the Malcolm McNeil piece I played last week, The Memory from My Childhood. Okay, fine. You know, that is exactly what this country is. We can disagree, okay? We don't have to all like the same thing. And I would not have it any other way. But I've reached into my memory again, gone back to junior high school, and come up with another musical piece that I hope he will enjoy better, and I certainly hope listeners will enjoy better. And who couldn't enjoy the sounds of Cher? Oh, yeah. See you next week. Good night.
I was born in the wagon of a traveling show. My mama used to dance for the money they'd throw. Mama would do whatever he could. Preach a little gospel. Sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good. Picked up a boy just out of the mobile. Gave him a ride, filled him with a hot meal. I was 16, he was 21. Rode with us to Memphis. And Papa would have shot him if he knew what he'd done. Around and lay money down. Never had schooling, but it taught me well with its smooth southern style. 3 months later, I'm a gal in trouble and I haven't seen him. A traveling show. My mama had to dance for the money they throw. Grandpa do whatever he could. Preach a little gospel. Sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good. Money down.